Welcome to the Travel Like a Boss podcast, where we interview location-independent entrepreneurs that travel the world like a boss by being their own boss. Here's your host, Johnny FD.
Hey guys, this is Johnny, and welcome to episode 268 of the Travel Like a Boss podcast. I am here at Frank's house in Kiev, Ukraine. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be back.
Yeah, so we actually just did a really good episode on Invest Like a Boss. That was episode 177. If you guys want to take a look, listen and learn kind of more about Frank's $20 million, I don't even know, it's not, what do you call it? Like fund investment, like business? Okay. But you're basically living like a boss, like multimillionaire out here in Ukraine. The first time we met, and this is a funny story, you picked this like super nice restaurant, and while we're eating, there was like this big Russian guy at the next table, just like tough looking dude, just like looking over at us all the time. And I didn't know who he was, because I don't think I saw you guys walking together. I just like noticed like this guy like that just kept like, you know, just looking our way. And it wasn't until after the meal, when you stood up and he stood up, that I realized he was your bodyguard.
Yeah, yeah, he's a really good guy. I like him a lot, and I'm grateful that my partners felt the need to hire him and have him on my side. But yeah, he's a good guy. He has a really good training, actually. His experience was like he was an anti-terrorism unit on the east, fighting in the war for a number of years, and then he worked for a number of like diplomats here and deputies, and then his last boss was like one of the biggest real estate developers in Kiev. And then as things happen in Kiev, he went to jail. So he became open on the free market. So he's a really good guy. I really like him as a person and really good family man. So yeah, he's very thorough, let's just say, about his job.
Yeah, but also like lifestyle wise, I mean, he's also your driver. This is something that you can't really like your current lifestyle now. If you're living in an expensive city like in San Francisco or New York, having a personal driver, a bodyguard, you have some assistants, you have like a nice, like super nice house that you're living in, you're eating at these like, you know, five-star restaurants, you could technically afford it in the U.S., but it would cost so much more, right?
Yeah, you know, it's really less about costs and about one philosophy that I really like that I heard from another expat person. I don't consider myself like a huge like person who talked about this topic, but it's the guy says like I think it's from Nomad Capitalist. He says go where they treat you best.
Yeah.
And I had this philosophy, but I never could put into words as well as he did. And when I heard him put it into words, I said this is exactly the philosophy that I always do. Like whenever I pick the restaurant, the country, the businesses, I always believe in. You know, people say like, you know, how do I have like such a, not just me, but they ask for the advice for themselves. Like, how do you have such a good business relationship with people? How do you have such good friends? And I said, you know, as ridiculous as it sounds, I only do business with people who want to do business with me. Mm-hmm. I only have friendships with people who want to be friends with me. I'm never chasing. You know what I mean? I only want to work with investors who want to work with me. There has to be some synergies, right? And yes, you're 100% right. Like in a bigger city, it's much more expensive. But, you know, here I came really for work. I came here to hire like lots of engineers for my companies because they're kind of like the proprietary advantages that I use in a lot of my my quote unquote unsexy markets that I use to you know, roll up the space. But yeah, I would say that in a bigger city, it's just the food is not even as tasty. Right, like, and you've been here in Kiev and Ukraine. It's really like, for example, I traveled to Italy with some of my friends, and they're big popular bloggers here. They know all the restaurants, and we were really excited to go to Italy, and we all went as a group. And they were like, you know, we're in Italy, we should try the pizza, and all of us unanimously agreed. We're like, wow, the food in Ukraine is like really tasty for pizza, like yeah. Even better than the original countries. I mean, like the tom yum here is like so tasty, and they have it in like every restaurant. Like they really like to make things here, and they're making guacamole really great. And I think it really comes down to they have less expenses, because in bigger cities, The two main cost items for any restaurant is like the labor and the real estate.
Yeah.
So when you're eating in San Francisco and you're eating like, I haven't been there in such a long time, like your $30 like guacamole and whatever place, you're not really eating the guacamole. You're eating the walls and you're eating like this person's like paycheck.
Yeah. Because right? They're like if the server's getting paid $15 an hour and then there's tax on top of that, you know, so on top, you know, so the actual cost to the business might be like 20, 30 bucks an hour or whatever. And then the real estate, their rent is probably like $7,000 a month or $10,000 a month or something.
Minimum.
Yeah. So they can only afford to put so much in the cost of food. And then, you know, and yeah, they're busy, you know, like, but here, you know, rent is cheap and like labor is cheap. Like, I mean, literally the servers might only be getting paid like $300 to $500 a month and food costs are low. But actually I think the food here, like ingredients are better. Like, do you remember having a tomato in California? It doesn't taste like anything. It tastes like fucking water.
Yeah, it's because, I was joking with my friend, and it's like, you know, if you want to eat organic, just eat in Ukraine, because everything's technically organic, because it's like grown like from somebody's like a garden. Like my neighbors are growing all the stuff here. Actually, when the coronavirus happened, everybody was asking me like, are you coming back to the US? Like, it's going to be turmoil. Like, at the time there was pure, like, nobody knew what was happening. And in Ukraine, they're like, okay, we're closing the airports. You know, if you're an American, this is the last chance to get out. Like, you better go to the US or you're stuck here and we can't help you. And everyone's like, are you going to come back or not? And I said, no, are you crazy? Yeah. Well, first of all, I was watching all this crazy toilet paper stuff happen. So that didn't make any sense to me. And I said, guys, I'll be fine in Ukraine. They're like, why? And I said, worst case, if it's the end of days, all my neighbors know how to grow potatoes, so we'll be okay, right? Nobody I know in California knows how to grow potatoes. And if it gets cold, all my neighbors know how to make moonshine, because we have it at our like dinners and stuff like that. And they're much more hands-on, so they need to fix a car. So I'm like, I feel much more safe in Kyiv actually than in a place where they're like punching each other for toilet paper. So
yeah, you know what's crazy is I feel way safer in Kyiv, Ukraine, than I do for sure in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Like, I've never been robbed in Kyiv, and I've been here for, this is my third trip here, so I've, you know, been here for quite a while.
And I'm sure you haven't been robbed? Maybe your heart was stolen by some...
on a weekly basis, but no, like, I remember I was so nervous and scared in the beginning, because I would be in these, like, shady situations, like, at night, you're walking across the street, but you can't cross the street, you have to go, like, through an underpass.
Yeah.
And in the U.S., in New York, San Francisco, pretty much any big city, if you go under, like, if you walk, not on the main street, but, like, underground where the metro is closed at night, you're probably going to get robbed. Or there's going to be, like, some crazy homeless guy bothering you. Something's going to happen.
Yeah.
Here, I was so on guard, and I remember, like, freaking out, just, like, looking around, and somebody came around the corner, and I, like, panicked.
Yeah.
And it was, like, some, like, 19-year-old girl, like, just walking by herself, and, like, she wasn't panicked, and I was like... Okay. And then the courtyards of every building they look dark and dangerous. And the stairs are like, it looks like
some Soviet area. You've watched too many James Bond movies, man.
And I'm just like, man, I'm going to get robbed.
Yeah.
And then after a few months of not getting robbed, I'm like, actually, this is a very safe country.
It is pretty safe. It is pretty safe. Look, every country has their own problems. And of course, it's unsafe in different ways. But if you're talking about like... this type of like crime, it's very safe from that perspective. I have a thesis behind it, actually, which is I believe that countries like this have to be more safe in order for it to operate, because as you know, there's not strong rules of law here. Like, I don't know if you ever dealt with the police. I have many friends in police, and many of my friends are like politicians and diplomat and prosecutors here, so I know how the system works, right? Basically, if you're a normal Ukrainian, you have some kind of problem, even like marital problem, domestic violence, they're just like, figure it out on your own.
Yeah.
Like, I have lots of friends who are like, oh, I couldn't sleep last night. I said, why couldn't you sleep? They're like, oh, the house upstairs, they were getting drunk and they were like beating each other. I'm like, well, you said it like, it was like, you know, just like, and every day, like, it's like nothing. In US, it's like, you're calling the police, they're coming over. So I think in order for a society to operate that doesn't have strong rules of law, they have to almost abide by like the honor code, right? That's why relationships are very important here, because you don't have like, and that's what I find refreshing here, because my background is more of like a deal maker relationship guy. That's why I didn't like, I liked the U.S., but it became this, like, tech thing. Like, you're looking at somebody's LinkedIn. You're looking at their resume. Oh, he was ex-Uber, ex-Twitter. I don't care about any of that. Like, you know, we're going to sit down. I don't like texting even. I don't even like phone calls. We're going to sit down. We're going to get to know each other. We're going to look eye to eye, and we're going to understand each other. Like, that's, to me, like, how it works here. Like, that's why everything's based on trust and referrals, because there's very little recourse in very bad situations. That's why also the girls here are much more street smart, because they don't have the same protections and recoils that they you do in the U.S. So that's why they're much more like understanding of like good situations, bad situations, and because there's less of a safety net. And I think that's reason why everyone has to behave, because or else it'd be turmoil.
Yeah, it definitely makes sense. But I think even from all my female friends, they feel super safe here.
Yeah.
And like, they know that like people are going to be like polite and respectful. And like, if something happens, like, you can, when you walk around the streets of Kiev, nobody's going to smile at you or be nice to you just to be nice. But if you need someone's help, everybody will help.
Yeah.
And without even, without you even having to ask, like, for example, if you just go to like the metro or like the train station where people are going up and down stairs with like suitcases, just watch. I guarantee you in every 5 minutes, you're going to see, you know, someone carrying like a heavy suitcase, and then some guy is just going to come up behind her and just grab the suitcase and just help her down the stairs. And in the US, someone would probably scream saying, oh, I'm getting robbed.
Yeah.
But here they just say thank you. Yeah. And like, and then there's no, like, it's not a big deal. Like, people don't even, like, you know, and then the top of the bottom of the stairs, they don't spend 20 minutes, like, saying, you know, talking. They kind of just say, okay, goodbye, have a good day.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. I was with one of my friends the other day, and she obviously Ukrainian, and she worked in Italy for a number of years, and she was talking about her perception of Americans. She worked in an American restaurant there when she was a teenager, and she's just like, this freaking small talk that these Americans do. Because I also don't like small talk very much either. That's why all my friends joke that I'm really like really Ukrainian guy. I'm always ordering borscht and salo and like drinking a little bit of vodka. And actually, you're actually the only person from the U.S. that I communicate with. Oh, I've been here 3 years. I have no friends from any other country except Ukraine. Like, all my friends are Ukrainians. And so I'm pretty ingrained here. But anyways, I want to touch on the point that you said, which is, I think it's very refreshing, because in the U.S., smiling is like, it's meant to be polite, right? When it got warped from what its original intention, because when you smile at somebody, smiling is really an emotion. You're happy to see somebody, right? Here, it's in its purest form, which is like, I shouldn't smile at you just because you walked in front of me or you're my customer. Like, you know, like, of course, they're going to be pleasant, but you're not like, have some friendship. In the U.S., it's kind of like you walk to the cash. And it's funny, like, some Ukrainians have this like perception of Americans that they are like smiling all the time, like, because, and it's like this fake smile. And for the most part, it's kind of true, right? Like, every place you go, people are forced to smile. Your waitress needs to be pleasant with you. This, of course, you should always be pleasant, but like, smiling and too jolly. And it's draining. I think that's why a lot of Americans are tired, because you have to put on this like really fake mask, right? Yeah. And that's why when I was working there, like, I would just, I'm more of a real person. It's like, you know, I'm not gonna like, I just don't like being fake, you know. It's much more refreshing here, because that's how they operate here.
My favorite thing about Ukrainians is they will be completely blunt and honest with you. In the U.S., if you meet someone, even if you have no intention of ever talking to them again, you'll probably, for whatever reason, feel obligated to be like, hey, let's grab coffee sometime. Oh, such a nice, it was so nice to meet you. Like, yeah, like, what's your number? You know, like, let's keep in touch. And then they literally, might 2 seconds later, say to their friend, oh, God, that guy was such a bore, or like, you know, just say something negative.
Yeah.
Or just have zero intention of ever answering your call.
Yeah.
In Ukraine, if you said like, hey, like, you know, let's meet sometime, let's have coffee, they might just say, "Niet," you know, and they like, and they won't be rude about it. They won't like, you know, like look down on you about it, make you feel bad about it. But they might just say like, "Oh, no, thank you."
And I never experienced that. I understand your underlying point. But yeah.
But like, if they do say yes, they really mean it. Like, if you say, "Hey, let's have coffee sometime," and they say, "Okay." That means that they'll write you in a few days and say, I'm free tomorrow for coffee. What time do you want to meet? in the U.S., it's just like tons of text back and forth, tons of BS. I couldn't stand it.
I'm not an expert in that realm, but I can talk about it from more of a business culture type of thing. Maybe I can add on to the conversation like that, which is, you know, what I really like about it here is that when you have some kind of misunderstanding or somebody's doing something weird, what I really like is that my friends are always like, all my friends are like business owners here. And as I said, some of them are politics. So they're always doing something that involves like people. And like sometimes there's conflicts or misunderstanding. Mm-hmm. Their solution to everything is let's sit down and talk about it. Yeah. Like it's like really direct. Not like in a, like they always have talks. Like it's like how they deal with conflict. It's like, okay, you seem to be on this side. I seem to be on this side. Like let's sit down. You say your side. I say my side. And we'll hammer this out. Like. Mm-hmm. And that's how I am. So it's like it really works well. So I can see elements of what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I said that. And the other thing that we mentioned was the safety, where here nobody will smile on the street for no reason. But if you ever actually need something, everybody's willing to help. And a good example is the other day I was walking and I don't know if I was like taking off my mask or like taking something off, but my AirPod fell out.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like panicked for a second. It's like, oh, crap, like losing an AirPod. And immediately, like without asking, like everyone around me, there was like three people that were just walking by. They all stopped and they all helped me look. And then they just handed it back and they like I said thank you and they just left. It wasn't like it was just like a very normal thing. And I feel like, let's say somebody was getting robbed while walking on the street. One of the reasons, and somebody joked about this, saying the reason why no one ever robs anyone is because they said like, what's there to take?
I got the okay. I didn't hear that. That's yeah. Gotcha.
So most people don't have that much money on them, you know. And it's also a very cashless culture here now too. Everything's like PayPal on the phone or something. And then second, on top of that, I want to add is if you try to rob someone, even if they have like 30 cents on them, they will probably fight you to the death. And then some like guy is gonna like run up and help. Because they just hate, like, they really hate, like, robbers and criminals.
Yeah.
So it's not worth it for someone to try to steal your phone when most people here have a, you know, $40 phone. And even if it was, a new iPhone, the chances are 10 people on the street are going to try to stop the guy, and it's not going to end well for him.
Yeah, I would pretty much agree with that statement. Yeah, you know, I traveled to Thailand a lot because my mom is half Thai. Mm-hmm. And so during my childhood, I went there a lot. And I would say, like, just countries like Thailand and this place, it usually exhibits the same kind of commonalities where it's like, I don't know, in the U.S., it's just like, I don't know why they don't intervene. But there, it's like, they'll just, like, mob the person. Yeah. They're like, screw this guy. Like, we're going to mess him up. Like, yeah. It's like, you know, because I think in countries where there's much more, less safety with the rule of law, human nature is like, we're going to make this rule of law. Yeah, like, yeah. It's going to be street justice here. Mm-hmm. And it works. Like, people are in line, you know?
Yeah. I like it. Like, I honestly really like this culture. Like, it's weird because I have nothing to do with the Slavic culture. But in some ways, and I remember when I first decided to move here, my cousin, who's from Taiwan, said, oh, you'll like it because they're like Asian people. And I was like, what the heck are you talking about? They're more like Russian people. But the longer I've been here, I realized there's so many commonalities. You know, for one is what we said, like nobody like just randomly smiles at someone for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
But Thailand's different. Everyone's like, you know, it's a land of smiles.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Like,
It's their business, though. It's tourism. So that's why they're doing it. They're more like Americans from that sense.
Yeah, okay.
But if you like meet like normal like people who are not in the tourism industry and like the like you live there, then it's like more like, yeah, it's more like Ukrainian.
Okay, yeah, I can see that. So people aren't just friendly to strangers for no reason. So it seems like they might be rude, but they're really friendly to family members. And when I say friendly, I mean, you know, like not even that – let's not even the word. Like in the U.S., in American culture – even if someone's your family member, sometimes you're kind of like not that nice to them. You know, you're not that there for them. You're not going to like take care of them no matter what. But here in Ukraine, I feel like it's kind of like that Asian bond where if someone's your family member or close friend, you'll do anything for them and you really take care of each other.
Yeah, yeah. I will second that completely. And that's actually one of the biggest I mostly came here for work, right? And then – but eventually I want to have a family. Having a family is very important to me. And I do want to have it in Ukraine. I think it's very important. And because the reason is about this whole bond that you have, right? Like that you were talking about, which is every person is like all my friends, even though they have like big businesses or are busy with their own lives or they have some conflict with their family members, they're very like, it's about family, you know? It's about their friends. Unless you do something extremely bad to them, it's really hard for them to like really drop a relationship. And it's the sense of like bond that I think is like missing in the United States, right? Which is like, you know, as you know, like everybody really loves children here in Ukraine. In the U.S., they're seen more as like a, I guess like a part of like society that just happens to be there. Whereas yeah. here, it's like everybody's looking forward to children. Like you'll see all these playgrounds like almost every few feet.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they really care about it. And if you go to these, a lot of restaurants have nannies and play areas for all these kids and stuff that are free. Like you're a customer at the restaurant, you want to enjoy yourself, like it's completely normal. And it's easy to find like nannies here. Like I remember my best friend, he lives in SLO, and obviously he's a working guy. He's he has a full-time job. His wife is also has a full-time job. They both graduate good schools, have like full workloads, right?
And that's San Luis Obispo, like yes. Central California.
Exactly. And the problem is that like obviously they can't pick up their kid all the time, they can't watch him all the time, and they're trying to pay like they're nanny sharing with somebody else, and they were trying to pay like $3,000-$4,000 per month, and it's like hard even to find somebody who will accept it even with some normal pay, right? Whereas like here, I think it's just like cultural. It's like, you know, if you tell somebody you're going to pay them to like look over a kid, they're like, oh, and that doesn't sound too bad. Like, yeah. you know, I love children, and to get paid for it, it's like not so horrible of a thing to do.
How much would it cost, do you think?
I don't think I know the prices. Yeah. Starting is around like $700, $800 per month. I'm talking about full time. Okay. If you want English speaking, like full time live in nanny, it can be about like $1,000.
Okay.
If you want to go like even higher end, it can be like $1,200, at most like $1,500. Yeah. So that's kind of the price range. But again, I want to emphasize it. It's less about the money and the attitude towards it. You know what I mean? It's like people just love children here. People love families. Like children are seen as like bright spots in their lives rather than like, you know, all my friends are always posting about kids on their Instagrams outside of their like work and they're all influencers and stuff. You know, they have their private accounts or they put on close friends or something. It's always about like their niece, their nephew, the children, this birthday party. Like people genuinely like stuff like me, like it's so it's a good place to of course it has its own like I don't want to make every place sound like it's like daisies and rainbows. Of course it has its own downsides to raise children, but from that perspective I would say it's superior.
I could definitely see that. And Thailand's actually very similar too. I remember somebody being like worried about like, okay, if I go to Thailand to this beach like Koh Lanta or something, like how, like where am I gonna find someone to take care of the kid while I'm swimming? And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like just leave it with like the restaurant or something.
Leave it. See, it's American.
Seriously. This thing. Leave it. Yeah. That's American to me. But like leave your, like, I was like, you can just leave your kid at a restaurant. And they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, I was like, just trust me. Like go to a restaurant in Thailand on the beach and then somebody will happily watch your kid while you go swim. Like they're happily, like you could probably leave your kid with them like the whole day and nobody would think of it as a burden. They would just be like happy to watch the kid and play with the kid.
Yeah, just make sure you trust the person and they're a good person. But yeah, assuming those are check the box, I agree with your statement. So yeah, I would say there are some positives. Not some, like again, like, you know, everyone asks me this question. What's better, U.S. or Ukraine, right? And I have so many different stories of people having trouble in the U.S. and some people having trouble in Ukraine. I mean, adjusting to life. And the best way to say it is that it's not that one is better than the other in a lot of senses. Like I'm a pretty fair, balanced person. Mm. I would say it's just a different variant of what you want the strengths and weaknesses to be, right? So like I said, like Ukraine is like has a lot of positive opposed to U.S., but then again, the U.S. has a lot of positive opposed to Ukraine. So it just depends how it fits into your personality, your lifestyle, your business, all this stuff. So, you know, I think a lot of people, I get a lot of messages from my Instagram saying like, you make, you know, Ukraine look so amazing. Like you're having so much fun. You're having all these like great friendships and parties and relationships. Like I went to Ukraine. It was definitely not like that. And the main point I want to stress is that it's I guess like I just match this place really well. And so personality wise, all this stuff. So it's some people do better in the U.S. Like I know a lot of Ukrainians, they thrive in the U.S. and they don't really like Ukraine. It depends on the person specifically.
Yeah. And I would also say like it depends on how much time you spend here and the relationships that you make, because Ukraine could literally be a cold, hard place to live.
Yeah, it is. It can be.
You know, like literally, but also figuratively.
Yeah.
If you show up and you don't know anyone and you're not very witty about figuring things out and you don't have good relationships for people to help you figure things out, you can have a very tough time here. And you can come here and hate it. And you'd be like, you can walk around the wrong places and you'd be like, this is just an ugly place. And with, you know, and you can eat like food and be like, what are these guys talking about? What do they like about this country? Everything seems difficult. Everything's hard to figure out. And on one hand, they are correct. You know, in half the year, the weather is very cold.
Yep.
But at the same time, if you figure out how to live here, the right place to go, when to be here, where to live, what restaurants to go to, how to get things done, then there's so many positives of being here that, for me, completely outweigh the U.S. for half the price or less than half the price.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you completely. Yeah, it's you have to be a little bit street smart here because it's really like a relationship driven place. Like I remember I met this one guy. I don't communicate with him, but he was telling me, I think I met him in one restaurant or something. He was like, he heard me speaking English and he came up to me, "Oh my God, you're speaking English, and it's American English. I'm from Los Angeles, like blah 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 blah." And I was with my friends, and he just wanted to join. So, okay, whatever. Just join us for a little bit. And he was telling me, he's like, every time I leave my door, I'm getting like scammed, I'm getting hassled, I'm getting like, and I didn't want to be too rude, but after I asked him enough questions, like, he basically did it to himself, if you know what I mean. Mm. Like, you've lived here. Like, there's two routes you can take. Like, he told me he went to a restaurant with some girl and she like ran up the bill. And I know this restaurant, it's a nice restaurant, but I'm like, each roll of sushi there is about like 500 hryvnias, right? Mm.
Which is like $15.
Yeah, and maybe the most expensive was like $700, right? And he told me the bill was like $500. And I looked at him. I said, "Dude, how is it humanly impossible for two people to eat that much sushi? Like, you know, it's not humanly possible."
So like, you got like a $500 U.S. bill.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And he's like complaining that he's having all these problems. And then once I started asking him a little bit, it's really like self-made.
Yeah,
like,
but I can tell you actually, I don't know if you're aware of this, there's a kind of common scam where girls will get a commission from the restaurants for going there. The restaurant will charge him a higher bill knowing that he can pay for it, or he'd be, you know, or whatever it is, and she gets cash back, so she can get 30 or 40% cash
back.
Yes.
One of my really good friends has a real legit matchmaking business here, if anybody's interested in this kind of stuff. She's a real, real legit one, not a scam one. Like, she runs a real clean operation. She's good at what she does. And yeah, actually, she gave me a discount card so I can also get the cash back. So actually, I have the cash back from the same restaurants. Oh, I know which ones they are. But here's the thing, and I don't like speaking so specifically about like societal structures and stuff like that, because I'm a very open-minded guy, but I'm also a realist that I can see how certain things happen, right? Just like kind of any society. I saw this in Thailand a lot too. Like, you know, there's girls who work at these like bars and they like take money from guys, and like, so the stereotypes that you see about even Thailand or Ukraine, or just take any country, forget Ukraine, like I don't want to talk about it specifically from this sense, is that there's always like different, for lack of a better word, classes of people with different morals and ethics, right? And that small little sliver of girls who are doing that in Bangkok, in Phuket, in Ukraine, in
Las
Russia,
Vegas, where, in Toronto. Yeah.
So that's why I really don't like that people have the stereotype that it's only Ukrainian. I mean, in Las Vegas, I know this happening to a lot of my friends, right? But anyways, any self-respectable person, I can tell you in Ukraine, doesn't do that kind of stuff.
If anything, any they're the normal complete person. Opposite.
Yes.
If anything, like, I remember going on a date with a girl, and actually not just like once, just happened many times. The girl is so afraid of being put in that stereotype that they just won't let me spend money at all. Like, we'll go for a date, and they will insist on just going for like a 5-hour walk around the city to get to know each other. Yeah. And then I'll like try to take them to dinner or like spend some money, and they're like, no, we can just Like, I'll eat at home later. Don't worry.
Yeah, yeah. They're like any normal person who wants to you to have a good image of them, especially in a country where there's like lots of stereotypes about them, who wants you to view them in a positive light, is not going to like do that kind of stuff. So when I hear the few stories that, because I generally don't interact, like I said, all of my friends are Ukrainian, so I don't really hear too many of these stories, but I see it online and like, you know, I watch TV shows and I'm on social media, so I'm obviously like seeing this stuff. And I'm watching, I'm like, God, like this is like somehow, of course it makes for good TV. That's why it becomes popular, right? Like the show 90 Day Fiancé. Yeah. Oh, I love that show. Oh, it's great drama. But, you know, when you live here, you realize that these are like the weird, like, of course, as Americans, you can be like, yeah, these are like pretty extreme American guys, right? And then when you've been in Ukraine long enough, you're like, yeah, these are not like, I can't speak for all of them. So, but the few that I can't speak for all of them, and that some of them were normal, and some of them were like, I was like, okay, this girl's like clearly like, this guy really did it to himself.
Yeah. Like, I would definitely say if someone is kind of naive or not that street smart, or you're afraid of speaking up, or like, I don't know, just, I don't want to say you're like a weak traveler, but like just like an inexperienced traveler, someone who hasn't lived abroad, Ukraine will probably eat you up and spit you out.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you come and you take personal responsibility, you're like relatively, you know, a street smart, you can survive, not just survive, but you can avoid these bad things, and then you can have the most trustworthy, best friends and relationships, I would say even more than the U.S., you know, and something that we kind of very briefly mentioned on the other podcast we can get into now is I just bought an apartment. Well, I put a deposit down on an apartment, actually.
Yeah, waiting for you to close, man, so we can have the housewarming
party. I'm excited for it. And there were pretty much every single person that I had, you know, mentioned it to or had watched my YouTube channel where I was looking at apartments, they all warned me about the scams.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing. Is there's a ton of scams. So it's not, you know, it's not like the US where you buy a place, you have title insurance where like everything's guaranteed. You know, it's a very straightforward progress where like you make an offer, and even if you put down a deposit, you can completely get all your money back if it doesn't pass inspection. Here, I didn't realize this, but and luckily I found out before I put down the deposit. Once you put down the deposit, that's it. Like pretty much the place is yours. Like you can't really go and be like, hey, the plumbing doesn't work or like electricity doesn't work. They're like, oh, too bad. You like either I keep the $5,000 deposit you put down, or you buy the place. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's a different system, but I will say also, I think a lot of again, like my background is in investment banking, private equity, like real estate, and I will tell you the one thing I don't like about especially American business people is that they find too much safety and comfort in contracts and all this like legal safety net system. Mm-hmm. And I think the coronavirus was the best example of this, right? Which is like people, and again, like I get that there's trust in a system, but you have to understand that like. At the end, like, for example, when I do business with somebody, like, some people are, like, pretty not trusting, but they just have this philosophy, which is, like, I can do business with a shady person, but if I have a good legal contract, nothing can go wrong. I mean, like, there's many problems that can be caused by a person who's, like, not ethical or, like, not a good philosophical fit or good cultural fit of you doing business with them, or you're just not on the same page, where a lot of problems can happen, right? And, again, like, in the US, there's too much like trusting in this, right? It's like, oh, well, I bought this thing. It seems like not so good, but but in the US, we've seen this. Like sometimes insurance companies will not pay you out, right? Or they'll pay you very little. Like, and it's funny, but like there's so much trust in this. That's why, you know, in Ukraine, it's more like you do your real due diligence, right? It's like,
hey, bosses, wanted to take a commercial break and let you know about this week's sponsor, athleticbrewing.co. If you are not sipping on a tasty beverage right now, go to the fridge and grab a can of something delicious. And if you're like me and you don't want to drink alcohol during the day, but you still want to have a tasty drink like an all-out stout or an upside-down beer or seltzer or something, you can check out athleticbrewing.com. And you can actually use a promo code BOSS20 to save 20% off any of these non-alcoholic brews. Anything from Run Wild IPA to Upside Down Golden Ale. There's a ton of delicious drinks, and they keep adding more. I'll get the variety case just to see what you like. But the Free Wave Hazy IPA sounds good. Cerveza Athletica sounds good. Actually, they all sound good. The First Ride Coffee Porter. And this is a great way to have a tasty, non-alcoholic brew. That's actually still a craft beer. And because it's non-alcoholic, you can drink anytime, and it can be delivered to your door. So go to athleticbrewing.com and use promo code BOSS20. Hey bosses, this week's sponsor is Rerouted.co. So if you have a bunch of outdoor gear laying around, maybe at your parents' house, maybe in a closet somewhere, this is a great way to sell some gear, get some cash, and free up some space. As you know, I am a minimalist at heart. I like to travel very lightly, very slowly. So those winter boots or that winter coat that I no longer need, I can sell them on Rerouted.co. It's also a great place to buy secondhand gear. Not only is it good for the environment to upcycle, but you could also get a great deal, and it's good for your wallet. So taking a look around, there's everything from backpacks to, you know, hiking shoes to snowboard gear if you want to get ready for next year, maybe get a good deal, sandals, packable raincoats, t-shirts, clothing, whatever you need. Check them out at Rerouted.co. It's great to sell, it's great to buy, and it's great for the environment.
I will not do business with you unless we have a strong relationship, right? Because I need to know you. I need to know who you are as a person. Like, you know, that's why a lot of these restaurants, we're doing handshakes, we're getting to know each other. You know, a little bit of alcohol. Like, I've had many business meetings where we drink alcohol because it's a relationship culture. So, yeah. You know, a little alcohol takes the mask off so people can really see who you are. And like, you know, and I agree with this philosophy a lot, actually. But yeah, I think that's ironically what gets a lot of Americans in trouble in their investment in their business, is that they feel safety in this system that may or may not be there. Like, for example, GIs, right? Like, they go to war, they think they're going to get all this, like, veterans benefit going to the hospital, and now they have, like, long wait times, right? Like, just, like, everybody's so, I think it's, like, maybe propaganda is too strong of a word, but we have this, like, view that the system is, like, strong, it'll always be there. Like, we have this, like, machine that's running, but I think when you really take a look at the social services and the machine, like our legal system, all this, it's more fragile than you think it is. And I think the coronavirus really showed. And just like when there's natural disasters, like I remember when there was like Hurricane Katrina and this stuff, and like some insurance companies were not paying out, and like, you know, you just have to do business that makes sense.
Yeah, right? I definitely agree with that. And a lot of people don't also realize that we're paying for that security or that insurance. That's why things in the U.S. are so expensive. You know, when they ask, like, why is healthcare so expensive? You know, and part of it is because every doctor needs to have insurance against getting sued, like this super expensive malpractice insurance. There's also, you know, all these other things that, like, add up, and it's not free, you know? Like, when you buy a house, like, title insurance isn't free, you know? But also things like low interest rates are not free. Like, the reason why houses are so expensive in North America is because credit is cheap.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why somebody who doesn't mind spending 10% over asking price, because they're like, oh, that's only a couple hundred bucks extra per month.
Yeah.
You know, and in Ukraine, more, you know, interest is like 14%. So it keeps out a lot of buyers, because if you don't have cash, and it keeps, you know, prices stable, because people can't come in and be like, oh, I'll put a, you know, 30, 40 year mortgage on this and, you know, overpay. Like, they have to pay like what the property is actually worth.
Yeah. And that's why I was trying to tie it in with this whole like investment bank private equity thing, because especially the higher level that you go, the more you can hire like these really sophisticated lawyers, like you're, you know, like charging like $1,000 an hour, these great accountants. And you feel the safety net behind this system. But actually, when you look at the underlying thing, it's the real same thing. Like, this is the one thing I learned, one of the biggest eye-opening things. Like, for example, financial statements, right? Like, when I was young, when I was a kid, I thought like an audited financial statement meant it was true. Like it had to be true. Like freaking KPMG or whatever, Arthur Andersen at the time, like approved it, right? Uh-huh. But as we saw with Enron, with Arthur Andersen, and that's why, you know, a lot of novice investors, people want to do business, especially if they want to do it not in their home country. Because the more you do it, how to say, outside of your home country or away, the more skill you have to have to see this stuff. And you have to realize that, like, you can't just take things on face value, especially like look at financial statements. Like a lot of frauds happen and they're stamped of approval by, you know, signed off by the CEO, CFO, and like the accounting firm, right? Wasn't that their crazy European company too that like $5 billion went missing or something? There was some payments company and they're just like, it disappeared, you know? Some guy just like stole it.
Yeah. And here it's like everybody's not very trusting. So you have to do your DD yourself. It's your responsibility. Like I put down, this is the third property that I basically agreed to buy. And the first one ended up being, I don't know if it was actually shady or not. Maybe, I mean, it's definitely shady in some aspect, but basically he wanted a suitcase full of cash. And maybe he was just being shady to the government where he didn't want to pay tax, but he could have been shady to me and hiding something. Who knows, right? But anyways.
Well, I will tell you that that's traditionally how they do it here.
Which is crazy because they don't trust. They didn't trust banks.
Yeah, why would you trust them? There's lots of – because here – that's why I say every country has pros and cons. Here, the banks have lots of failures. Mm-hmm. Like one of my really good friends, her family's life savings got wiped out because one of the banks just went under because they were having – and it had nothing to do with banking stuff. It had to do with like the owner of the company was having conflict with another person, made the wrong enemy, and they basically like pushed it into bankruptcy.
Wow.
Yeah, and then you're just like a third-party bystander. So that's why they prefer doing things like – a lot of Ukrainians have like money is under the mattress. Like it's, they just don't trust the banking. But that's also why real estate is very popular here because that's the only real form of savings here. Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
Just thought I'd add that.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And that's, I think, why prices for real estate in Kiev or Ukraine are actually, it seems high for being a poor country. But at the same time, it's because, I think I see it from two sides. One is I actually think it's very low compared and cheap compared to
other European countries.
Yeah, especially or like Moscow or something. Yeah, like it's $2,000 per square meter to be like right in the center. You can get it for as low as 1,000 even, some, you know, on the outskirts.
Well, let's not talk about that. Yeah. I don't think any normal person will want that one.
Yeah.
Okay. But 1,700 is more like
decent. No, yeah.
Talk about 1,000. It's
but like, I mean, and here's the thing. The funny thing is when I told people that I was looking, you know, between $100,000 and $150,000 for an apartment. And a lot, first off, people in California don't understand buying an apartment. I have to like almost say to them like I'm buying a condo, even though it's not a condo. I think people in New York or people in Europe, they understand like you buy an apartment. Like actually, what is the difference?
Actually, you know, I think technically a condo, I don't know, I haven't been in real estate a long time. I never sold condos or apartments. It was obviously like houses and things like that. I guess condo is just a bigger apartment.
I don't know, because some condos are tiny, right?
Yeah. I'm sure there's some kind of like a legal definition or zoning thing, which is why they're called that, maybe. But like from a commonality standpoint, I think they can be used pretty interchangeably. Dude, some of these flats in Ukraine are like three stories tall.
Yeah.
Like they'll I'll tell you something funny. I don't know if you know this, but like. A lot of times when somebody has like a flat, right, they'll buy the one next to it or the one above it, and you just like start demolishing it. Like there's no, in that sense, there's really no rule of law, and you just start building it. That's why neighbors are complaining that there's like things making noise. I know some people who have a three-story tall, they own like the top three stories, or they buy the house next to it and they break down the wall. In fact, one profitable strategy is buying like a really big flat, like a 100 square meter flat, and you can easily divide it and sell it, and then the sum of the parts is higher than its individual, and then that's how a lot of real estate investors and flippers do it here.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense, because no, like 100 square meters is what, like 300? Oh, I mean,
it's a lot.
Like 300. Yeah, it's big.
It's big. Like it, and having having many rooms is not so popular here because it's mostly for families. So if you're, it's easier if you're looking to rent it or sell it very quickly to have like a one bedroom or studio.
Yeah.
And that means it should be anywhere between like the 35 to 50 square meter range. Mm-hmm. So you can even get something for like 70 square meters and then divide it.
Yeah. I know that's super popular in like Hong Kong now where like they like divide into like these micro studios. And it's just because it's expensive. I mean, I wouldn't want to live there in Hong Kong, but it's crazy. Yeah. But one thing that's actually really popular with Ukrainians now, especially, I don't want to say the younger generation, because, you know, it could be people like who are, you know, 40 and just buying their first place, is not buying these old historical buildings in the center, but kind of going like 20, 30 minutes away and buying new construction buildings kind of on a little bit on the outskirts. And I think they like it because it's brand new. You know, it's they get a nicer kind of, you know, bigger place, and it's slightly cheaper, but sometimes it's not even that much cheaper. It still might be, you know, close to 2,000 per square meter, but they just have like a nicer brand new place. My personal thought is they're all going to end up regretting it in 5 or 10 years because first, usually it's thinner walls, kind of crappy construction, but second, they're now 20 minutes away and traffic's just going to get worse and worse the more people move out and get cars.
Yes and no. I'll add some context to this because I also had a very interesting view of this as well that I learned. Well, so one of it, it's not that it's like new that they're trying to get these like new buildings where it's like a new car, right? It's really that it's really ingrained in a lot of like I've seen this in culture that they value comfortability. Right, just like as you've seen, there's a lot of really, you know, again, there's many positives in Ukraine, but there's a lot of like negative, like irritating, like little things that add up to in the day that just like eats away at your like soul and your psyche because, like, you know, just you know, this inconvenience and that inconvenience and this. So, just simply having a working elevator that like has enough elevators for the entire complex is like it saves them. Having like, like I lived in Center one time. They rehabbed the building, the flat. Like it's very popular to do, and you know, sometimes the water is weird, or it's just, so it's just about like having this like in America, I think we really take for granted having like consistently hot water, or like for example, like the heaters here is not like the regular what do you call it, air heaters that we have. It's like you're turning on this water boiler, and I'm constantly like opening the window, closing it, trying to get like the temperature right, like, you know, and it's okay, but like if you're running like an intense business or you have a busy day, you have children, like it's just like one less thing to take off of your plate. So I'll give you another example too. There was this restaurant, and my friends kind of gave me perspective because, you know, they go to these like really high-end places, the guys and the girls that I know here. There's this restaurant called Queen's Restaurant, and it's kind of like the most posh luxury place. I saw it being built. It's actually off of the highway. It's not in the center. It's you know, as I drive from my house to the center, it's like in between. Okay. And I live the distance between like Fremont to San Francisco.
So like 30, 40 minutes away from
exactly. The city, yeah. So it's like there, right? And it's like this big building. And when it was being built, I was like, that's kind of an aggressive move here. Like, you know, why did they build it out here? Like, you know, it's so nuts. Like, who the heck would come to this thing? And my friend said, Frank, if it's fancy,
they will go.
They will go. And I said, I don't know. So I went a couple times when they first opened. It was good. It is the hottest, most packed place all the time. Yeah, they will. You know, I think it's also the best way I can think about Ukraine is that it's kind of like 20 being in the US but 20 years behind, right? So everything that we've already experienced and we went over that curve, they're experiencing that curve for the first time. So for example, like we're into deliveries, right? We love this kind of convenience because we've already been spoiled for so many decades about the in dining experience. But here they just only like, I think like, don't quote me on this because I wasn't here at the time, but my friends were telling me like 15 years ago, 10 years ago, there wasn't really much food options. Now there's tons of Italian food. Now there's tons of like, now, actually when I first came here, I couldn't find guacamole. I love Mexican food. And it was really hard to find Mexican food and guacamole. Now, I mean like, it was like a day I was like clapping when I went to my local supermarket and I said, wow, it's a packet of taco seasoning. This country is like evolving, you know? Like, so for them, like this in-dining experience is like really important for mm-hmm. them. So that's why I try to always keep an open mind whenever I'm investing in a country or investing in like understanding its local dynamics, because it's where they are in that growth curve.
Yeah.
So that's why they're like super into like newer buildings, because I think, and these restaurants, because we've already, it's kind of like we've already been there, done that.
Yeah.
For them, it's like, wow, we're leaving the house. Like, they like to leave the house. Like, yeah. Before it was like not so easy and there wasn't so many options.
Yeah, and also think of it as they see it kind of as like a event, like to go to a restaurant. Like, not that they can't, you know, because for some people they literally can't afford to go more than you know, once a week or once a month or something.
Yeah.
But it's also kind of just like you're going there and you're like, we're going to a restaurant. Like, that's what we are doing this weekend.
Yeah.
In the U.S., it's kind of like, okay, we're going to go eat. Yeah. And then what do you guys want to do after? Like, but here, like, they'll spend hours there. That's why they have, you know, places for the kids to play.
Yeah.
This is why there's shisha or, like, or hookah at every restaurant, so you can stay and like, hang out for a few hours.
Yep.
Some restaurants, it's funny, but there's literally dinner and dancing, which is a term I've always heard, but I didn't actually know what it meant.
Yeah, it's like not only fish. Like you'll have, if it's a Friday night, you'll start having dinner there and drinking. It's like 7, 8 p.m. By 10 p.m., the DJ starts playing and like everybody's like dancing in the middle of the restaurant. You're ordering like some sushi.
Yeah.
It's nuts. Like, yeah, you know, the craziest thing is, funny that you brought that up, is like watching people smoke hookah in nightclubs where there's people dancing. And like my American side, when I first came, I was like, wow, that's like a lawsuit waiting to happen. Uh-huh. Like no American place would do this. And I've never seen anyone actually get hurt. Like, everyone's pretty responsible. Yeah. Like, no, I've never seen anyone get burnt or fall over. Or, like, you know, nobody sued. You know, maybe somebody touched it. Like, ow. Like, nobody's like, I'm going to sue you. I'm going to, who's the owner? Like, nobody does that stuff here.
Like, it's personal responsibility here. Like, if you, and in Asia too, like in Thailand, there's like, you know, cracks in the road or like, you know, some missing brick or something. It's just pretty common, right? So people pay attention when they walk. In the U.S., people don't pay attention at all. They take no personal responsibility because they're like, I'll sue. Like, something happens, I'm going to sue.
Yeah.
So first, that litigation society makes everything more expensive.
Yes, for sure.
Secondly, it makes everything kind of like so cookie cutter and like like you lose the character, you know, versus in Ukraine. What I like about it is it literally is like the U.S. 20, 30, 40 years ago, you know, maybe 20, you know, 10, 20 years ago. And it feels more real. It feels more authentic. And it's not just these like cookie cutter suburban areas that have one Best Buy, one gym, one supermarket, one bank, you know, just like literally copy and pasted all around the country.
Yep. And I'll give you another example, like to really drive it home. And the reason I say it's like 20, 30 years behind, I don't mean it in a derogatory way. I mean that actually those are really great elements in that, for example, shopping malls are dying in the U.S.
Yeah.
Here,
they're booming.
Yeah. Because, you know, again, it's like a new experience. Like what we experienced in our child, going to the mall, meeting people, trying different foods, like, you know, window shopping. Like, it's great here. So there's some elements that are just like that. I think that was one of the most challenging things that most people experience is like buying stuff. Because the thing here is there's no Amazon here.
Yeah.
And their version of Amazon here doesn't work like as conveniently as in the U.S., you know? So I remember, you know, people who came from other countries are reading in the forums and the Facebook groups, and they're like, how do I find this? How do I find that? And I'm subscribed to this group just to read the news and some things that are in English. And I see a lot of people struggling. And it's hard because just like in our childhood, it's like, okay, I need a scarf. I need this. Where would it be? Which mall? You know, and you just have to go and check it out. It's, I'm not saying it's the most efficient thing, of course.
It's definitely not. But it's kind of, you get this wanderability of life. And this is also why relationships are important. A lot of times you have to ask somebody, like, how to get something.
Yeah. And actually, but that's also what makes and the reason there's a bigger reason I remember now why I'm talking about this whole, they're behind 20, 30 years. It's not to say that they're like a not sophisticated society. It's actually that they have like a lot of opportunities.
Yes.
So like I'm a big believer in business that like I used to watch so many I watched pretty much every business documentary from like low budget to like a one person documentary to like the really highly produced Netflix ones, bios, business situations. And I really believe that it's like sports. Like the more plays that you see, the more that you can see a situation, you know which playbook to use, right? So it's like kind of setting the history. So when I compare it to U.S. 20, 30 years ago, it's like the playbooks that work, who built big businesses there, I'm seeing in Ukraine.
Yep.
Like all the business owners here, basically, if you can give a really great, high-quality service, which means you just like give a shit about like what you do as a craft, you can already earn lots of money, yeah. right? In the US, like, you're already having to do AI this, machine learning, yeah. like food delivery with AI, machine learning, decision making, like, you know, blah, blah, blah at your fingertip. Like, it's like everything's like for example, Amazon's a shopping company that had to be like experts in logistics, yeah. right? And eventually Ukraine will get to that level. And they, you know, I would say their pace of growth is even faster. They almost each year, I don't even recognize the country anymore. Yeah. They like, for example, their food scene, their technology scene, everything, you know, I would say that like, it really is kind of like being in like a startup. Mm-hmm. Like it's like, has this feeling of like a startup where every day, every week, every month, one of my friends or a friend of a friend's inviting me to events, or there's this new project, there's this new product, this new service, like, and it's really interesting. And so I couldn't speak highly enough about the people here and living here.
Yeah, and they're definitely, like, it makes sense. And I agree that on one hand, it's like when we say it's like, you know, the US 20 years ago, I also don't mean it in a derogatory way. I mean, there's the benefits of the lifestyle. It's just
where they are in the growth curve of a nation.
Exactly. And like, and it's, for me, it's more like culturally the way people do things and things that people value versus technology. Because technology, they're super advanced. You know, the internet here is better than the US. It's more available. It's cheaper.
Yeah. Like, it's fast. It's really fast. Like,
and it's everywhere. Like, literally. Yeah. Everywhere. I'm in the metro underground going like, you know, 70 miles an hour. And I have 4G.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't even have reception in like, you know, like any, like a lot of places in the US, like a lot of houses don't even have reception.
Yeah.
And here I'm like, I'm like, you know, 50, you know, meters underground. And it's insane.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you know, every country has their own pros and cons. There's a lot of things Ukraine does better than other nations. And there's some things that they don't do as well. Yeah. Like that's why, like, you know, for people who are interested in like traveling or traveling to different countries, you shouldn't go just purely off base, like somebody having a really great experience there. It's really based on like who you are as a person. Yeah. Right? Like for me, for example, I'm half Thai. I went to Thailand like almost 15 times because I had to go every summer to visit my family and stuff. It wasn't like real vacation. I can't survive in Thailand. Mm. I don't like humid weather. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't like feeling like when I walk out of the house, I need to walk into another building so I don't feel like I need to take a shower again. Okay. You know, it's pros and cons. But a lot of Ukrainians, they love Thailand. Yeah. They love Bali. They love that weather. And I complain about it. They're like, really? It's like no sweat off on my back. And they're like, why do you like Ukraine? It's so cold. I'm like, actually, I don't mind it too much. Like, everybody's different. So you just kind of have to find your scene.
Yeah. Right? Have you, so I'm assuming you, like, you traveled quite a bit. Like, have you lived anywhere else, or is there anywhere else you travel to?
I'm not a big traveler. I worked so much. It was like really hard opportunity to travel. So I only went to places because my family members lived there. So I didn't have big traveling experiences. But that gets me into this point, which is one thing that Ukrainians love to do is travel.
Yeah.
It's like, you ask anybody what their hobbies, they're like, I love to travel. I want to travel. They have like such popular dreaming YouTube channels. They have all these travel TV channels. And actually, so the last 3 years, I started traveling with my friends a lot more and these groups. And it really opened my eyes to countries that I would never have gone to.
And what's funny is there's a whole set of countries that Ukrainians go to all and Russians go to all the time that as Americans, we don't even think about.
That's
so really like the two most popular destinations for Ukrainians is Turkey and Egypt.
Yep.
And those are two places that Americans just don't go to.
It's our version of Mexico.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's and the cheap. Caribbean
islands. Yeah.
Also, Georgia. Like country of Georgia, they love
Tbilisi,
it.
Oh, yeah, and stuff like that, yeah.
And, like, we just never go to these places ever. I mean, first, we don't know about it. Like, most Americans don't even know Georgia is a country. They've never, ever thought about going to Turkey. But for them, it's like, it's literally like them going to Cancun or to, you know, to Tulum. Yeah.
Actually, along those lines, like, it's that was one of the really big positives. So, again, I mostly came here for work, but then I started seeing, like, the personal life benefits of making like a Kyiv my home base, which is like about a year ago, actually, one of the girls, she's one of the most popular like bloggers and like influencers here for like high-end restaurants. Mm-hmm. And she wanted, it was her dream for her birthday to do this Italy trip. So all the friends and were like, okay, we're going to Italy. And I remember I went to Italy with all my friends and everyone in the U.S. like, oh my God, you went to Italy. Uh-huh. Like, it's amazing. Uh-huh. And I said, you know, it's kind of like going to Arizona for us. Yeah. You know, we're right next door. The cost is like, the tickets were so cheap. Like, everyone, you know, like, bought tickets themselves. It wasn't like something like outrageous. Like, because even for me, I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to Italy. Mm-hmm. And then when I because, like, you know, you think about this long flight, you think about this foreign country, but, like, it's no different than going to, like, Miami or, like, Texas. It's, like, really the hours, the distance, and the cost is almost similar. So it's, like, that's what I like about this. You can travel a few hours, and you're completely different culture. In the U.S., you travel a few hours, you're back in the U.S. Like,
you're still there. I mean, you might still be in Texas. That's right. Yeah. Actually, I know a girl who's, like, a university age. She's, like, 20 or something. And, you know, she doesn't have that much money, but she wanted to do a trip, like, during her break. So her and a friend took a bus to Italy. And they, like, and it was, like, an organized tour.
Yeah.
For super cheap. It was, like, $300 or something for, you know, 5 or 7 days. They basically took them through, like, Czech Republic and then some other countries kind of on the way.
Yeah.
And they chose the option, the cheaper option of just sleeping on the bus instead of getting a hotel, which I wouldn't do now. But when I was 20, and you told me, hey, Johnny, for $300, you can go to Prague, you can go to Italy, you can go to whatever. You just have to sleep on the bus. I would have been like, heck yeah.
Yeah. It's everything is local. Like for my birthday, okay, one splurge I did. I try not to do too much of this, but I love Mexican food. Uh-huh. As I said, like, I love it. And so on my birthday, I flew for 24 hours. I flew from here, went to Spain, found a really good Mexican restaurant that I really like a lot, ate there, then flew back.
Oh, my God.
And it sounds like pretty excessive, but it's kind of like, you know, I know I have some friends who went from California, I mean, the Bay Area to go to L.A. to go eat something, like either they're into like some kind of food and come back. But it was kind of like the same. But it just sounds like aggressive, right? Yeah. But it's actually like, it's not so bad.
Okay. It was funny because I guess, well, you know what? Spain has so many, like, such a variety of restaurants. But I remember when I first went to Spain, I just assumed Spanish food was going to be like Mexican food. And it's nothing like it.
No. Yeah. It was specifically a Mexican restaurant in Spain. It just happened to be, like, close.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Man, but, I mean, that is one good thing. One great thing about being based in Ukraine is technically we're still in Europe, but we're very close to also these other countries that we normally would never go to. And there's direct flights or cheap flights to, you know, a lot of countries in Europe, but also to places like Georgia, to, you know, places like there's so many people going to, like, Bali or going to Sri Lanka or going to Thailand or something from here that there's cheap flights.
I love it. Yeah. They love Thailand so much. Oh my God! You know the menus in I'm pretty sure you saw the menus in like Phuket are in Russian.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, they love these places so much. I'm like, please have it. Like, you know.
Yeah. And places in Sri Lanka, there's like some beaches that, like, they literally handed me a Russian menu, and I'm like, well, like, why would you? Like, I was like, I can kind of read it, but like, why did you hand this to me?
Yeah, they just assume because it's so popular and. Yeah, I would say that for anyone who's considering, this is a great place. You know, it's I would recommend anyone to come. In fact, many, many people came to Kyiv and Ukraine because of me. Because I live here, and so many of my friends, family members, and they all love it. Like, especially if you're a foodie. If you're a foodie, you have to really come to Ukraine, like Kyiv specifically. I mean, it's a foodie's paradise.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, I personally, you know, still love the Italian food in Italy. I would definitely make a trip there just to eat and then come back. But I would agree, the pizza and the Italian food here is very good, especially in the last couple of years. It's really good.
Yeah,
and the service here is going to be way better. It's going to be way cheaper, and some food, not Asian food, in general. And definitely not Mexican food, but some food like Georgian food, and I've been to both countries. I lived in Georgia for like 3 months.
Oh.
I think that the Georgian food here is actually tastier than most of the Georgian food in Georgia.
I'm telling you, you know, it comes down to their culture as well. Like, I'm not sure if this is 100% accurate, but like somebody was explaining this to me. So one thing apparently, I don't know if it's just Ukraine specific, but Slavic culture. So I think it applies to Belarus. Or, and again, I only heard it from one source. I can't verify this content. But apparently it's like really popular to complain.
Yeah.
Like it's like, and then I heard a modified version, which is because it shows like your class, like that you're like have some education or you're like higher class that like you want things exact and you complain, right? And like, for example, if you look at a review for like for a co-working space, right, it's pretty aggressive to give somebody a 3-star, 2-star review. Like they must have done something really bad. Like they change your booking time. Like they'll be like, the interior design is really bland.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I don't, their comments are like really, really nitty. And that's actually what pushes the standard higher, especially in all these expensive restaurants. Like all these wealthy politicians, all these business owners, they've been to these countries. They know what Western standards are. And they're like, no, like if we're going to do it like this, we're going to do it like this, right? And the owners of these restaurants are also traveling to these countries. So they're like, yes, we're going to bring these standards here. So, and it's so basically I feel it's from having such a fickle client base. I'll give you another example real quick, like restaurants.
Yeah.
Restaurants here commonly have seasonal menus.
Yeah.
And they all have like their winter menu, their fall menu, their spring menu. And I was talking because like a couple of my friends own some relatively big restaurants here. And I was like, why are you doing this? Aren't you adding a lot of complexity to your business? Like, it seems like such a nice to have. And what I started realizing more and more and more is that like Ukrainians really crave originality. They crave creativity. Like they rank you very high in that. That's why they're, if you look at their photographers and their photography skills, their video skills, their editing skills, their color grading skills, their interior design skills, that's why all of it, their restaurant design skills, their food, the presentation, like it all gets pushed up because they highly value that, like the experience. The US is more like, okay, you just throw the, like, for example, another big example, McDonald's.
Yeah.
In US, they just slap it together, throw it in your face, like, okay, this is your burger.
Yeah.
When you get McDonald's here, it looks like in the photo.
It actually does.
Yeah, it looks like the photo. Yeah, yeah. It looks like, you know, like you can recognize the Filet-O-Fish that you ordered. It doesn't look like, oh, the bun's on, you know, pulled to the side. Because in the US, it's kind of like, well, you know, you went to McDonald's, what'd you expect? Here it's like, well, you ordered something, you ordered it like this, and we're going to do the best job possible.
Yeah.
Or else somebody's going to really complain.
Yeah, I definitely see that. And I also think it's because people here value their money, because money, I mean, for most people, they don't make that much money, the average salary. So when they go to a restaurant, they want to have an experience, you know, or else they would have just stayed home and cooked. In the U.S., a lot of people don't cook anyways, so they're just eating literally every meal out. And they just kind of like, oh, whatever. Like, if it's not good, like, it's not that big of a deal.
You make an extremely good point. That's that's exactly the one of the best differences between how we view eating out versus them. For us, it's more of like a mechanical choice. Like, it's more optimal for me to not wash dishes and do all this stuff and buy groceries and, like, eat at a restaurant. Sometimes it's even cheaper than to, like, get all these ingredients from, like, Whole Foods or something if you're into that. But here, it's more like an experience rather than, like, a mechanism of, like, I want a different version of getting food into my stomach. It's like, I'm going to this restaurant. And that's why a lot of a very popular thing that people do for their birthdays. Like, I know a lot of people who, a lot of people eat at home. Like, it's a very homely culture. But for birthdays or something like this, they do it in a restaurant. Yeah. Like, it's really like, they see it as like an event, which I think is great. It keeps the level very high. And, they push the level of creativity pretty high, but there's a lot of pressure on them. So I wouldn't want to be in the restaurant business in Ukraine. Like, you constantly have to innovate.
Yeah. And funny thing is, I actually hate seasonal menus or like house special cocktails where I'm like, look, if it was something good, it would already be a classic or it would be on the normal menu. But now I understand why. Like, people want a different, unique experience, and they also want something kind of like new and fun versus just going and having, you know, like something standard that they can get all the time.
Cooking is not a lost skill here. So it's not like you're going to go to a restaurant because you can't cook a certain dish or like something like that. You truly value the whole. That's why they talk about the interior design, the plating of it. Like, it's not just as simple as just like put the food on the table and give it to me.
Yeah, I see that. So how long have you lived here?
think almost a little over 3 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what are your kind of future plans? How long do you want
to
stay?
I have no plans to leave. Assuming that, you know, I always add the asterisk, which is like assuming that nothing changes culturally or politically or anything like that. I find it matches me very well. Like, and the reason I say this is because one big fear I have about Kyiv and Ukraine in general, and I really want to keep its soul intact, is that I saw this happen with Thailand when I was a child, like 3, 4, 5 years old. It was truly the land of smiles.
Yeah.
And then it kind of got wrecked. Let's just talk really obvious here. Like, what is the brand of Bangkok right now? It's pretty much like a place where you come, you drink, you get drunk, you do debaucherous stuff, and you don't really respect the people there. And they're kind of over it, right? Yeah. They're like, okay, more foreigners are coming here just to treat us like, you know, we're like lesser human beings, right? And, of course, what happens to the culture there, like, don't get me wrong, it's still big into tourism, and they are, like, generally happy people, but, like, for me, I saw the shift within 20 years. Yeah. Like, I saw it change.
So that's a good example. So places that are just kind of for tourism in Thailand, like Phuket, Koh Phi Phi, Koh Samui, parts of Bangkok, people are it's crazy. And actually, my co-host Sam Marks on the other podcast, it breaks his heart. He's always like their biggest defender. Basically, it's kind of like the chicken or egg, but it probably started with the foreigners, where they come, they're drunk and rude and
disrespectful.
And these Thai people in the beginning, they're like so polite and so calm. Like their culture is they're so like the opposite of being aggressive. You know, like they'll tolerate everything.
Yeah,
but at some point,
too much is too much.
It's too much. Like and they're human. You know, so they will snap and they're like, you know what? Screw these foreigners that come and they're so fucking rude.
Yeah, screw your money. Like, any normal human being is going to be like, I'm not going to sit here and be disrespected.
So either they just, like, say, like, screw these people. We don't want anything to do with them.
Yeah.
Or they're going to say, well, you know what? All they're good for is money. So let's just take their money and be rude to them back.
I mean, it's logical, right? Like,
yeah.
It's like, yeah, if you're going to treat us like a transaction, I'll treat it like a transaction. Yeah. Like, you know, then it loses its soul and its purpose.
Yeah. And the bad thing about that is then it's really hard for someone who comes and, you know, they are trying to be nice and polite. They're not rude. But then, you know, these Thai people who have dealt with nothing but rude people for the last 20 years, you know, they're being rude or they're just, you know, kind of cheating them or charging them too much. So then the foreigners get mad, they get rude. So it's like a self, what do you call it? Like a cycle.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why I don't go to any of those places. Yeah. I go to islands like Koh Lanta where that just, you know, isn't as popular, hasn't happened yet. I go to places like Chiang Mai where there's just like normal people. And I think the reason why Chiang Mai, even though it's a very popular tourist place, is very calm and people are nice, is first, Thai people actually live there. They're not just there like to work in tourism. So they're happy to live there. And second, it's so kind of far out of the way that a 2-week package tourist or 1-week tourist just doesn't make it there. Like, the most common thing I hear is like, oh yeah, I heard about Chiang Mai, I wanted to go, maybe I'll go next time.
Yeah.
So by the time people actually make it to Chiang Mai, they've already traveled the rest of Thailand, they've got to know the culture, they realize what's disrespectful. And they're the type of tourist who like takes a slow and to like, you know, they're probably spending, you know, more than 3 weeks in the country, or this is their second, third trip. And they, by the time they get there, they're kind of calm, nice people.
Yeah. So my hope is that, I'd like to stay in Ukraine long term, but I really hope and pray that I really root for them to grow economically and all this stuff. I just know what happens to, my major was economics. I was on Wall Street, right? Like, it's like, I know what happens when development happens. There's positive and negative. So I just hope that it's like any kind of startup, right? In the beginning, it's fun. Everybody's and then it becomes a big corporation. You have like all these, like, you lose some of the soul. So I just hope this country doesn't lose, because it's starting to get like a little bit of a party reputation in Kyiv. And I'm starting to see elements of that Bangkok thing starting to happen.
The only good thing about it is, Kyiv in Ukraine itself has, first, that kind of a dangerous or scary reputation. But secondly, I think it, like, I think it's a hard place for people to go. So most people either are scared to come, or if they come, they generally just have a hard time if they don't speak the language. Yeah. They're not very, like, you know, socially savvy.
Yeah.
That I think that's going to be enough of a deterrent for most people to come or recommend it to anyone for a long time.
Yeah.
Like, for us, we have a normal life in Kiev, and we, you know, we don't get scammed. You know, we, you know, we have genuine relationships and friendships. For a lot of people, they're going to have a tough time getting by and enjoying life here. Like, I think people, a lot of people think that Eastern Europe or Ukraine is like this place you can show up with, you know, $600 a month and enjoy life. Like, no, like, you're going to have a tough time living here.
Yeah, you know, one thing I want to add, I think it's important to hear this. I really don't like disrespectful people who, because I saw this in Thailand a lot, who think that, like, their money buys them any kind of, like, respect, or they can treat people like lesser people. Yeah. And those people get eaten alive in, like, both countries. And yeah, that's why I was kind of mentioning, like, some, I was putting it politely, like, you know, some people do it to themselves yeah. here. Like, it's kind of like this... this point I'm trying to get across, which is like, you know, don't come to a, you know, you're a guest. Yeah. First of all, you're a guest. This is not your home. Like yeah. if you're walking to your friend's home, you're going to take off your shoes or uh-huh. whatever is culturally appropriate to you. Right. Like, and a lot of times the people who come here, they come with like this arrogant attitude. Mm-hmm. Like they're one country is lesser than another. Yeah. Like, oh, my money will buy this and that. Mm-hmm. And you'll be sorely mistaken here. Yeah. Like you, especially like, you know, you'll definitely attract the attention from the people that you don't want, yeah. which is your self-fulfilling prophecy. And then for the people who are actually, like, real, legitimate people, which is 99% of the society, they won't deal with you. Like, yeah. it's abnormal.
That, you know, it's funny that you brought that up, because I first started going to Thailand in, like, 2007, so, like, 13 years ago. And I remember back then, the only people who would go to Thailand were... You know, I had this bad reputation, right? Like, you go there just to party or just to go to the red light district or just to do these, you know, crazy debaucherous things. Mm-hmm. And most of the guys that I met there were, you know, these older guys who, like, were just kind of sleazy, like, socially inept people that just wouldn't be able to survive yeah. in normal society. So they go there where their money, you know, and their skin color makes them kind of king, right?
Yeah, I grew up, I saw it. Yeah, yeah. I grew up there. Yeah, I saw it all.
But what I've seen in the last 10 years... is way more normal people go now. Like, Thailand is now a very normal place to go. Like, if you say, you know, like, I moved to Thailand, people don't think of just the stereotypes. You know, they yeah. realize you're moving there because they have a cool digital nomad scene. They have great scuba diving. It's, you know, amazing food. It's just, like, a nice place to go to. So more normal people go there.
Yeah.
I feel like Ukraine is kind of the same, where, like, for the last, you know, even now, to move here, you must be a crazy person. But I do think that, and so a lot of the expats or the guys who have moved here might have that bad reputation.
Yep.
But I see in the future more I know so many normal girls who are moving here now or want to visit here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not something that existed 5 years ago.
Yeah. For me, like, I would say the biggest reason I moved here, and I would encourage everyone to look into this country, is the level of talent. Mm-hmm. I remember hearing Tim Cook talk about this. Who knows if it's accurate or not. Mm-hmm. You know, he was on a public thing, so who knows if he's saying politically correct. But I understand what he was trying to say. They were like, why are you manufacturing all the iPhones in China? Why don't you do it in the US?
Yeah.
And there's a stereotype that Chinese manufacturing is, like, really cheap. Mm-hmm. That and he was explaining, and I saw it true because my dad was in contract manufacturing. He's like, those days are gone.
Yeah.
Like, it's not manufacturing China is not this, like, super cheap, like, uh-huh. place. But he brought up a very good point, which is, like, guys, like, when we build this iPhone, like, there are very, very specific parts that requires high level of engineering. When I'm in the US, I'm lucky to find one person in the room. In China, I have 10 in one conference room.
Yeah.
Right? I see the same thing with Ukraine. Like, in Kiev, and in Ukraine in general, there's really, really high talent. I don't want to speculate why it is or if other countries have it or not. But let's just keep it open. I can only speak for my experience here. Yeah. I don't know if it's higher ratio, lower ratio. I didn't study it, right? But the main point is, like, there are really, really talented people here in engineering, in photography, in video, mm-hmm. in party planning. Like, I love working and partnering with them, really. Like, I can't stress it enough that I really love working with people here and doing business here. And, like, they have a very high standard, I will say. And the reason I bring up the Tim Cook thing is, especially if you work with, like, the top people, in the country, they're not that cheap. Mm-hmm. It's, you're not doing it for expense. Like, that's why, like, I'm not doing it for like purely expense reasons. Like, it's just like, you know, the really top people are like, they're not cheap at all, but like their level of talent and the ability that they can do and certain like niche specializations they have, I couldn't find anywhere else.
Yeah.
So
I definitely see that. So Ukraine, like, I think one of the worst reputations it has is that it's a cheap place to live.
Yeah, it's
not.
I mean, you technically you could try to do it, yeah, but like you would be pretty miserable. Like, but in general, yeah, if you want to have a normal life, it's not like, okay, it's cheaper, of course, by a percentage point. But I see what you're saying, where it's like people think that it's like you spend $500 a month here and you're like living like a sultan or something. Yeah. it's not true at all.
I think one of my nightmares would be to be a poor guy in Ukraine. I think your life would be way harder to be a poor guy here.
I don't know, man. It kind of sucks to be poor in US too. Like,
yeah, you know, that's,
I mean,
true.
Like, look at Skid Row. Like, so I don't know. I actually, you know, Ukrainians complain about being poor here in the healthcare system. I'm like, I honestly, guys, you've been watching too many movies about the America, because you should see San Francisco and Skid Row.
It also
and
sucks,
so, but, you know.
But think
I'm just trying
way.
To be fair here.
Would you, okay, so knock on wood, right? Let's hope this never happens to anyone we know again. But if you're going to be homeless and you had to sleep on the street, would you rather be in Orange County where it's warm the whole year, or in Ukraine where you would literally freeze to death and die?
I don't know how these people do it. Yeah, I would Orange County for sure. Like, yeah. I don't know how it's humanly possible. I don't even know how these street dogs survive this winter. Like, where do they go?
Like minus 20. It's insane.
How do they do it? Yeah. I don't understand.
And secondly, like, I would rather, like, I remember watching this documentary about, like, poverty in the U.S. with my Ukrainian girlfriend, my ex-girlfriend, and she was just laughing the whole time because, like, she was like, how do these, I was like, the poverty in the U.S., people were living in their car.
Yeah.
And she was like, that's a nice car.
Yeah. First of all, it's a car. Like, you know, it's an enclosed space, right? Like, that is very true. Yeah, nobody's living in cars here.
And they were going to, like, you know, not like restaurants, but they were getting takeaway food. Like, I think one of them ordered like Uber Eats to their like car. I'm like, people who are poor in Ukraine are actually poor. Like, they have real problems.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and so, anyways, if I had to live like for $800 a month, I would have to live like 30 minutes out of the city, take a crowded bus, you know, like not be able to like eat at nice restaurants. Like, I wouldn't want to live here. I would go somewhere else. I would go somewhere, you know, that the cost of living is much lower. I think to have an enjoyable life in Ukraine, and especially if you want to live in this, like, in the center of Kiev, you need to spend like $2,000-$3,000 a month.
Yeah, and to second that, actually, what you're saying is actually how Ukrainians feel. That's why a lot of there's a huge migration of like people from Ukraine who, if they're in that situation, they go work in Europe. They work in Paris. They go work in either tourism, restaurant, IT. A lot of people leave Ukraine just for that exact reason, because it's, even for them, they're like, you know, I'm smart. I know my worth. I know my talents. Like, I shouldn't be confined just for my economic situation just to be in this country. So that's why a lot of them immigrate.
Yeah. And I don't blame them. But that was actually my biggest fear, is that Ukrainians are just going to leave. Like, all the young kind of talented people are going to leave. I think the only thing kind of stopping them is, first, you know, family ties where they want to stay around. But secondly, it's even though it's easy to travel to Europe now because their visas.
It's hard to live and work because of visa reasons.
So we'll see what happens in the future, but I know for now I'm super happy to live here. You seem like you're quite happy living here. And the thing is, you can afford to live somewhere else. Like, you're a rich guy.
Yeah,
you
know? Actually, along that point, I love stating this. Is like, look, I've been very blessed through my hard work and with some. I always believe that everything in life involves some amount of luck, because there's people who believed in you, supported you when you didn't have it. So like, everything involves, like, I don't believe there's such thing as a self-made person. There's somebody who supported you, gave you a chance. Like, so there's some elements of luck, right? But yeah, I worked hard for it. But yes, I am in a very fortunate position where I can be anywhere on earth. And my friends thought I was crazy. Like, why don't you pick Paris? Why don't you pick, you know, like Florence? Like, why don't you go to Bangkok and, you know, or Dubai? Like, you know, I was, it was my first trip to Dubai recently, and I was interested to see what it was like. And it was like cool. It was nice. But it just wasn't the best match for me. It's a nice place to travel. Maybe I'll visit there again, but I couldn't live there long, especially the summers are really hot. Yeah. I prefer cold versus hot because for me, it's easier to go from cold to become warmer than it is to be warmer to go to cold. So yeah. That's my logic. I purposely chose to live here. And to give you another sense, I never told you this. Before I moved here, like, you know, I'm a nutbag like this because I was an investor. I made like a multi-page analysis about the economic situation, a financial model, its growth rate, like I really, really made a very thoughtful decision to be here is my main point. Like, I made a trip. I made two trips. I already had some, people who were working for me here. They showed me around. And I was, like, really looking at it as a whole. So, yeah, I really thoughtfully thought about this move 3 years ago, 4 years ago, I guess, you know, 3 years and 3 months, however you went around it, 3 years and 6 months. I can't remember anymore. And I would say, like, yeah, it was a good decision. So yeah, I was extremely thoughtful about it. And so that's why I hope that can be a recommendation enough. Cause I really, really want nothing more than just to see, you know, I always try to recommend all my team members too, to all my people in the US, and they're very pleasantly surprised working with them. So, you know, I want to put money in these people's pockets. Like, yeah. You know, I can't recommend it enough. Give it a try, give it a visit. Yeah, you know, like, there's level of talent here is pretty high. Yeah, again, every country has great people, too. So I didn't want just to say about Ukraine, but it's been my experience. It's an easy, for me, for what I do, is an easier cluster, especially when it comes to engineers.
Yeah, I definitely agree that people are super smart here. But the funny thing is the labor is not cheap anymore. Like, talented IT engineers, and I'm assuming you've seen this with your... People used to get paid, you know, like, the idea of being able to hire a Ukrainian developer for less than $1,000 a month, unless they're, like, you know, some new, you know, college grad, like, that's gone. Like, if you want to hire a good IT specialist, they expect to make $3,000 a month. Minimum, you know, and some of them are making $5,000 a month.
Yep. Supply and demand.
I think the smart ones still live here and they're making $5,000 a month.
Yeah.
Because they can really live like a boss. But a lot of them, they realize, like, look, like, you know, you can hire me, or I can work for an international company, or I can just move somewhere and I can make that.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I love it. So Frank, it's been fun hanging out, talking about Ukraine, but also travels.
Happy to do it.
If people want to follow your ventures, how can they do that?
Best way is, I guess Instagram gets updated the most. The username or whatever you call it, the handle is Frank Song. I'm not super tech savvy, so that's where a lot of stuff gets uploaded. I'm having a YouTube channel that's coming up very soon that talks about investing philosophy, running a business, growing a business. So you can look out for that. If you want to contact me, best way is franksong.com. And yeah, you know, I try to be as available as possible, but I still run all my company, so I do my best.
Yeah, we appreciate that. And if you guys want to know more about Frank's actual businesses, his investment philosophies, take a listen to Invest Like a Boss, episode 177, which will be aired shortly after this one. So make sure you subscribe to Invest Like a Boss. Frank, it's been a pleasure, buddy. And let's enjoy the rest of the day.
Wonderful. Yeah, me too, actually. I have to go to the bathroom. That's why.
Thank you for listening to the Travel Like a Boss podcast. If you want to hear more, including the bonus How to Choose the Perfect Niche episode, join our mailing list at travellikeabosspodcast.com. See you next week. And remember, if you want to travel like a boss, you need to be your own boss. So start your online business today and start living the lifestyle you've always dreamed of.